This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today we're joined by Dr. Darren Hudson. Darren is with Texas Tech University. We'll talk a wide variety of things coming up in just a moment. First off, Caitlin McCullough is director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center, or LMIC, talks about the chance of additional culling in the Southern Plains.
I think it's definitely a possibility, especially when you consider that area hasn't probably been the focus of a lot of culling in previous years, whereas the West has had now probably 2 years of continuous herd reduction in some of those states. Northern Plains obviously had a larger year this year too. Those are going to happen in 2022 and won't affect our January 1 numbers quite yet, whereas that major impact is going to be from that western drought last year in the Northern Plains.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Darren Hudson. Darren's with Texas Tech. Great to see you.
Glad to be here.
You know, I have to say, it's kind of good to see in person here. It's been a while.
It has been. The meetings are starting to kind of trickle back in, and it's, you know, you're getting used to going to a meeting as opposed to being on a computer. But it's great to see people face to face. I've missed it.
The other thing you're getting an opportunity to do is see people with cotton trading at $1.20 on the old crop and new crop pushing $1 at this point. Wow, what's happening?
There's a combination. I think there's a lot of the sort of the general market inflation, people, you know, hedge funds and groups out buying. There's a lot of underlying demand for cotton. There's some of the crop is short. If you look at India, it was shorter than people thought it was going to be, you know. So the demand for U.S. exports has been very, very solid. And a lot of times we talk about these high prices as being sort of inflated artificially by outside money or whatever. But in this case, I think it's safe to say that the underlying demand is there. So these prices are probably reflective of true sort of market value. And I think, you know, the other side of that too is, the logistics issues have put a lot of pressure, in trying to pull stuff out into that supply chain and get it around the world, and we're having a lot of difficulty doing that.
We rolled the clock back a few years ago, and we saw $2 cotton. Completely different fundamentals between then and now, but at the time, it took out quite a few in the industry due to margin calls. Are we concerned about anything like that moving forward?
I think, the merchants can answer that question probably better. I mean, certainly we're not in the same situation we were in 2011. And on the most important thing is that the Chinese aren't buying, you know, accumulating stock. So on the back end of this, there's no sort of big bubble of cotton setting out there that, you know, depress prices for a multi-year period, at least not yet. So on that front, we're definitely different. I think on the other side of that, mills and merchants, have approached this a lot differently, and I don't think they're overextended. I think part of what we're seeing is, you know, there's some attempts to get things bought to fulfill contracts. And there's on the backside of that, producers and everybody else are kind of holding out going, this is worth a little more than we think, you know. So there's a little bit of gamesmanship going on there, but I don't think the risk of the huge margin calls, you know, destruction is there. But we do know that over the next couple of months, mills, there's a lot of cotton out there that's unfixed that they don't have in their possession that they've got to get a hold of on these contracts. And so there's going to be some people caught in the middle. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing with this $1.26, $1.27 is some panic of trying to get these things either bought or rolled over to, you know, to the next crop year.
So You mentioned kind of the supply chain issues. Cotton really has a unique supply chain issue in the fact that gins were backed up for a while. We still have some gins with counted well over 150 modules on one this morning. But then we have the classing office issue. Is that factoring in?
Technically a producer can't sell that cotton until they have the classing card back. So what's happened is that backup, and the classing office gets backed up, but this isn't the Lubbock classing office. They're all backed up, right? Part of it is labor. They don't have enough labor to be able to run multiple shifts to kind of get through it, this backlog. Some of it I've heard, sort of anecdotally, like module averaging is, the classing office will get, five bales samples, and then four bale samples won't come in until 3 or 4 days later, and it's way at the back of the line. Well, in a module average, you're waiting on the average of the module, and then so you can't sell any of those bales. Whereas an individually classed bale, you can, sell it as soon as you get the classic card. So I think there's a number of those issues. They're going to work through it. I think it is putting sort of a damper on the movement of that cotton because it's sitting there waiting on a classing card. And it some of it's trucking, speaking to the compresses, a couple of the compresses that, they're moving. But if you go to a couple of compresses, like the Farmers Compress I know in Plainview I've seen, they have, stacks of orders of these bales that are ready. They just need a truck to show up to put it on the bed of the truck. And so that logistics, it just sort of a ripple effect, right? And that happens all the way through the supply chain. And ag is, we have to remember ag is at the low end of that bidding process. If you're Target or you're Walmart or you're somebody like that, and you need to move big screen TVs to a facility, you can certainly outbid a truckload of cotton in terms of that. So I think there's some of that. All of that stuff is going on dynamically, and I think that's part of the issue.
You mentioned Target, Walmart. Makes me think, leading up to the holidays, some of those retailers actually going out and not buying, but leasing the containers, the ships, the whole works to make sure that they get the products here. So let's go back to China at this point. We're nearing the 2-year anniversary of the Phase One agreement set to end in February. Where are we going?
Well, we're not going to make it to the Phase One agreements. I think that's, about 6 months ago, I was at a meeting talking about this. The interesting thing is, if you look at the overall, the Phase One agreement, they're not near their target on the Phase One agreement. Of all of the categories in there, the one that they're closest on is ag. And part of that is because, remember, that's a value-based measure, not a quantity-based measure. So as commodity prices have gone up, they're buying corn, soybeans, other things at a higher price than when they started that agreement. So it looks like they're buying, a lot more when it's really a higher value of the shipment. That's not to say they haven't bought a lot of soybeans and things like they have. And I think that's probably the key is they're buying. But I think, the issue that we're going to have going forward is the tensions, the political tensions with China. We're already starting to see some of the discussions about how to move away, and China's backing away from, its buys and things like that. So I think, diversification in our supply chain, export supply chain, is the way to sort of avoid this problem in the future. I think that's the only way we're going to get out of this.
And then we have the whole issue of just trade in general and a U.S. trade representative and an administration without a trade promotion authority. Is that concerning for the industry?
It should be. I mean, obviously, the administration needs to be able to act on opportunities that come up, and trade promotion authority is part of that mechanism. The U.S. trade representative has been more aggressive, perhaps, than even some previous ones on enforcing trade agreements. I mean, we just came out of a dispute resolution process under the new NAFTA with Canada, with the U.S. winning, the argument on that. So, the industry needs to be concerned about that. Trade is very important to agriculture, and anything that promotes that or fosters that in a way that is healthy for the community, I think that's where we've got to go. We've got to promote trade in a way that's healthy for ag over the long term.
Great to see you. Wish you the best. Come back and see us soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tony.
Again, it's Dr. Darren Hudson with Texas Tech on today's Agribusiness Report.
What happens when Fendt and Livingston Machinery work to make your tractor buying experience the best in the industry? You get a 3-year, 3,000-hour full machine warranty, all scheduled maintenance, and a loaner guarantee, all at no additional cost. The Fendt Gold Star program is setting the new standard in customer care. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Well, on Thursday, Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack before the House Ag Committee, his first time in a year, and he had an opportunity to answer questions from California Democrat Jim Costa on dairy.
We could spend the whole day talking about the rural economy and the challenges we face across the country regionally and the different impacts that this pandemic has had in terms of closing restaurants and schools and impacting our food supply chain in ways that we could never imagine. And obviously, we're still working on that effort with our ports in Long Beach and Los Angeles. But I'd like to focus on a couple of areas and continue this effort as we set the table for the farm bill next year that I know the chairman and all of us are very interested in doing. We touched upon the effort of the challenges regionally of milk production. By the way, I want to commend you and Ambassador Tai on that resolution with Canada on recent decision that was made. That's helpful, I believe, to ensure we have a level playing field with our neighbors to the north. But that limitation on the program, the volatility assistance program that you implemented to reimburse dairy farmers for their losses, obviously impacts producers differently around the country. And the limitation that 5 million pounds per producer obviously doesn't reflect that one size fits all. And I'm wondering, we're trying to figure out in areas of the country where it doesn't, how we might provide an effort to cover the losses that they sustained during that time. Mr. Secretary, you care to comment?
Congressman, the reason why we established that limitation was the fact that during the course of the previous administration, the way in which COVID relief was provided and helped as it relates to the food box program resulted in a somewhat of a distortion in the market that created a situation where there was a significant difference between Class 1 and Class 3, and many producers, many small producers were hurt. And so this was designed to provide assistance and help to the small producers that were hurt because of that circumstance. I'm happy to work, and we did work and are working on a variety of other ways to help this dairy industry across the board, and be happy to work with you on any ideas or thoughts that you have to provide assistance and help to the dairy industry.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack with California Representative Jim Costa in front of the House Ag Committee. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Dr. Darren Hudson with Texas Tech. The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
When it comes to farming and dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
And now, the president of Huxley College, Professor Groucho Marx, on the subject of education.
Have we got a stadium?
Yes.
Have we got a college?
Yes.
Well, we can't support both. Tomorrow we start tearing down the college.
But where will the students sleep?
Where they always sleep, in the classroom.
Well, that's not the education we had in mind. Instead,
what we're rolling out now is what's called risk management education.
Marcia Bunger runs the USDA's Risk Management Agency, which will be investing about $2 million in competitive grant money for local groups like colleges, extension offices, and other nonprofit groups to develop training and education projects for farmers.
So it could be anything from basic financial planning, record keeping, and risk management strategies.
She says USDA is particularly looking for projects reaching farmers who may not be familiar with all the programs and techniques available to help them. For more information, go online to grants.gov. USDA will accept project proposals until March 11th with the goal of actually having projects operating by midsummer. Gary Crawford, Washington.